Right, thanks again for that, Dorothy. That was really good. And I'd like to introduce our next speaker. It's Albert. You're from Sunday Night Ealing. You said your first meeting was at Kingsbury Tuesday night, wasn't it? And a chap called Bob was the one that took you there, I think. I'll let you.
Thanks. Thank you. Can you hear that? Yeah, it's all right. Thank you. Thank you. How do you follow that? Which is some Dorothy there, you know. My name's Albert Riggs and I'm a recovered alcoholic, and what I've recovered from is a hopeless state of mind and body. And you know, I look back at my life, you know, I come from I'm going to go back to where I started, you know. I was born in West London, you know, my parents were Irish. They came over here after the war, they both lost brothers in the war, and I was born in London in 1952, the 4th of April 1952. And I come from a non-alcoholic home. I never seen my dad drunk, or I never seen my mum drunk. I never seen my dad take more than two light ales in his life, you know. And I went to a Catholic school. I was taught by the nuns. Didn't really like that. They used to hit me with a ruler. And they used to put soap in my mouth because I was always doing something I shouldn't have been doing. And that was the start of my life, you know. And I resented them nuns. I heard the word resentment talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous. They was on my list nearly 50 years later, you know. Or 40-odd years later, I'll go back to that in a minute, you know. So I was born in West London. I went to a school, and I was best summed up by saying I was always doing something I shouldn't have been doing. You know, I was that sort of child, you know, and I've got one brother who's got no problem with his illness, and my mum liked him and my dad liked me. That was the house, how the house was split, you know, and it was okay. I knew how to lie, steal and cheat before anything in my life, so that was to end up being part of my life, you know. We didn't have a lot, we had nothing really, so I never got. All my mates had sweets in the sweet shop when I was going to school, and I had no money, I just had my bus fare, so I learned how to steal the sweets from the shop. And that was the start of my life, you know. And at school, I went through the junior school, and I went to, and everyone that said I went to the senior school, it was, why can't you be like your brother? My brother was 3 years older than me, why can't you be like him? And I was always sat at the back of the school, in the back of the row, and banged the desk and sang to the teachers, Rosie, Rosie, show us your leg, a yard above your knee, and all them sort of things for the young teachers at the school. And I wasn't that big and all that, and I was, you know, I was always doing something, and I wasn't stupid, to be honest. I wasn't stupid. I was good at some subjects, didn't know much about English, didn't know where the punctuations went or the stops, and some of my sentences was on going on for weeks. You know, and all those things, you know, and I didn't know where you put the commas and the internet, so fuck that. I didn't want to know nothing about English. I put that away. My maths was okay. I was quite a genius at maths. I knew how to make sums and all them other things. And so that was the start of my life, you know, and it was when I was at that senior school, it was 1966, 67, and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones was coming around, and it was jumping in London, and I was only 14 or 15, and fuck me. But the only thing was, I didn't want to tell anyone, so I didn't go into the showers at school because I hadn't come into puberty, and all the rest of my mates had and all that, and I hadn't come in, so I'd have to have a shower on, you know, if I had one, you know. I'd try and make some excuse. I'd always get back late from running. When we'd run the cross country, it'd be 3 miles. Three or four of us would run around the corner, go in the bushes, have a fag, and when they come back past us, we'd hit the mid-section so we wouldn't have to run for the school, do you know what I mean? So we was quite sensible about that. I didn't want to end up in the first six because doing cross country, I didn't like it anyway. So, and I kept on and on, and all the girls wanted me to sit on their knee, but I didn't want to do more than sit on their knee, do you know what I mean? And so, but I hadn't come into that stage, so I felt a little bit left out, and all the others were having a bit of this and so I was 14 or 15, you know, and I was going, and I kept on looking out that window, and I thought, fucking, I can't wait to get out of there. And the old teachers, they were young then, because they was coming out of college and they was young, and I used to get on quite well. I had the record for the most amount of cane at one school ever. 18 of the best in one day. That was an odd trip. I was caught smoking, I was caught gambling, and I was caught doing everything else I couldn't have done in school in one day. And I got thrown out of the school. then the fear, the fear talked about in the book, the fear was in my life then. I had to go home and tell my mum and dad, who was on the parents' committee at school, I'd been thrown out of school. I told my dad and he nearly killed me. Eventually got back in, and I was told I wouldn't be allowed to stay on. I'd have to leave school that end of that 15, I was 15, it wasn't long to go really. And I had no idea what I was going to do, you know, and I was looking out that window and I thought it's a big wide world out there, I want to get some of that. And there. So I left school and I had nothing, I had no qualifications or nothing, absolutely nothing. So I didn't know what to do, and my dad knew the bloke who owned the ladies' hairdressers up in Ealing. And so me and my mate Kevin, and we were two skinheads, we went up there and we got a job in the hairdressers washing the ladies' hair and that. And it was quite, it was all there. I had the uniform at 15 of the skinheads and that, and it was razor head share and a razor parting through the centre. And that was what it was. And so I went in there and I got onto that, and I was in there for about a couple of months, and I hadn't really found a drink by that at that time, you know. I was more interested in what was going on around the places, clubs and nightclubs, and the Who was around our way, and lots of big bands were around Ealing and Acton and all that, and I'd creep up them places sometimes at night. And a couple of months later, I was in there, and one of the girls said to me in the hairdresser, she said, "Albert, no disrespect to anyone in this room, you know." She said, "Albert, if you stay in much longer, you might become a bit effeminate." I didn't have a rough idea what she was on about, but I wasn't too sure, you know. So I was out the door, and me and Kevin went out the same night, and we run off, like, you know, and I never went back. And I got on a job on a building site within a couple of days, you know, and that's where I stayed for the rest of my life, nearly, do you know what I mean? And that's okay. So I got out of there, and I was doing that, and these people looked after me where I went to the job, and they looked after me. So I was able to dress myself how I wanted. It was a uniform for what I wanted. It was this and this and that. And it was a uniform at the time of the chaps and the boys. And I joined my beloved football club, Chelsea Football Club, which I found very early in 1964. And started going up there and started getting in with all the chaps and all that. And that was another, it was a skinhead era. And it was boots, belts and braces and Dr. Martin's braces and Windcheater jackets and Harrington's from America. And there was two shops in London that sold American clothes. One was in Brewer Street in London, and the other one was in Richmond, the Ivy Shop. And that's why I used to kit myself out with a uniform, and you had to have the uniform, you know, if you wanted to be in the chaps. So I was in that, and I knew how to get hold of the girls by then. I'd grown a little bit, and I was all right. I was one of the boys, and I was always quiet. I was at the back of the gang. We had a gang around West Ealing where we lived, and it was Ealing Broadway and West Ealing. We was the West Ealing chaps, and we had one black kid who was with us. There weren't many black kids around him, and he was from America when he came to live in London, and he was with us, you know, and he was all right. Ray Lovell, I always remember him. And it was to go on like that, you know, and I picked up that drink about 14, probably 15, and in the example of an early night of going out, we was in West Ealing, I was walking down the high street with a couple of lads. Next thing, the car pulled up, one of them was old enough to drive, Greg Parker, Nutty Parker, Arpic we used to call him, because he was clean round the bend. That's what we used to call him, Arpic, you know, that was his nickname. He used to hear it on his things, Arpic, he was clean round the bend, and that was it. So Arpic said, "Come on, jump in, lads." We said, "Where are we going?" He said, "We're going to see Love Affair," and it was Love Affair, the band, and they just done that song, and it was coming, it was 1967, I remember it. And we was walking down there, and there were seven or eight of us, and there wasn't enough room in the Zodiac. So me and my mate jumped in the boot, and we had a bit of string on the boot, and we headed off to our Wickham. We got to our Wickham, we had a couple of drinks. I didn't know a lot of drink. I was more or less looking for a girl or something, one of the old country bumpkins from our Wickham. We get hold of them for the evening, do you know what I mean? In the town, it was a packed town, and it was ramming with us lot being from London, we were boys, like, you know. Everyone told that my name was Albert, and they told me I was Ronnie Cray's son. One of the Cray twins' sons. I was one of their sons, and fucking hell, so I had to play that one up, you know, and it was all going on like that, and it was fun, you know, and I was getting all this girl, and then all of a sudden the lads come and said, "Now, what are we going to go and do something?" I said, "What are we going to do?" I said, "We'll go outside and we'll sort it out." And we'd gone outside, and I'd never been in trouble really with the police or nothing like that. So I've gone outside, and next thing I'm getting involved in something which I've never done. I knew how to lie, stealing, cheat, but I'd actually never stolen something from anybody other than from the till or whatever it was. And there was this van, and they've opened it up, and there's all the records of the DJ who's in there playing while Love Affair's on and all that. And they've nicked all the records, and we put them in the back of the Zodiac. in the boot. We've gone back in, and we're having a right old time, and I've got split up, and it was a big place, Wickham Town, or it's still there today, because I don't know where it is today. And so we've gone in there, and I've come out of there. Now, there was eight of us that went down there, and there's only four of us left going home. So something's wrong, isn't it? So this is the insanity of me. I realised that the police station's next door to Wickham Town Hall, which it still is today. And I've gone in there to find out if they've found any of my friends. So they quite opened the door and said, oh, come and see us. So we've gone in there. I said, well, I told them that. I said, we're missing anyone. And I said, we come here with eight of us. I said, there's only four of us going home. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, come in here. And the next thing, I was in the cell. That was the last one. The other three went home. You know, they knew I'd never come out. So they went home. And then the next thing, it was 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning. And I've been interviewed, I can't remember, it's a long time ago now, and what went on, I've never seen anyone else. And next thing, I see my dad coming in, and he weren't too fucking happy. Being woken up in the middle of the night and having to go to Wickham from where we lived in West London, he weren't too happy at all. And he kicked my arse when I got home, I'll never forget it. And he punched me and he hit me and that fucking thing. And that was the start, you know, and that was That was one of the first nights I had a drink, and that's what happened. So from the start, I was in trouble from having a couple of pints, gone out with no intention of having nothing, and that was a change. And I wouldn't say that was the start of my... So that's at 15. So jump along here a bit, you know. So now I'm coming up, I've got a job, and I'm doing all right, and I'm okay, and I'm having a drink. I'm going to every nightclub and place in London, and I'm looking at, and I'm sorting out. I'm having a drink, but I ain't alcoholic by then. I'm having a drink, and I'm okay. I'm going to work. I'm working hard, and they're paying me well. And I'm going all over England with Chelsea on the trains on a Saturday. We didn't used to pay. It was the Intercity. It wasn't the Intercity firm from West Ham. It was the ICF, the ice cream firm from West Ham. It weren't them. And we used to go all over England. And we get back for the Saturday night, and we'd have caused trouble in Nottingham and caused trouble here. I was only a kid, and I was at the back of the pack. All the other boys was up the front, and I was in the middle of it. I was only 15, 16. And it was to move on in 18, 19, and I was still doing the same and was all that. And I get back, and I was drinking, you know, and then I met a girl who I fell in love with, really. She was 3 years younger than me. I was about 19, and she was about 15, 16. And it was okay. We got on well together, and then, as I went along a little bit, 20, I got changed a bit, and then I went looking for other women, do you know what I mean? That wasn't satisfying me, and the relationship ended. She ended the relationship because of my unreasonable behaviour, to be honest. I was always out. And then I was looking about that word resentment, because she finished with me. Who the fuck does she think she is, you know? And that was it. I got resentful, I got angry. I made her whole life for quite a long while. I would be anywhere I knew she was, I would go with them and I'd kick it off with all the lads and all that, and we'd kick it off, and I'd cause problems everywhere. And I never ever got over that relationship with her. And it was me and my drinking. I'm now 20, 21. I've come out of my apprenticeship. I'm working on a building site. I'm going to jump back here a little bit. I'm 19, 20, something like that. My mate said, come and work with me. I've gone up to a building site. And at dinner time, we went to the pub. Now, I really never been to the pub at dinner time. I was always working. I was more interested in what I was wearing, having a game of cards with the lads and that, and I'll be in the betting shop. And so I went to the pub, and anyway, next thing we're staying, it's 3 o'clock. They used to open at 10:30 then. Someone else was saying that. And they closed at 2:30, 3 o'clock. And he said, and we stayed on till 2:30, 3 o'clock, I forget what time it was. And he said, that's it. I said, well, we can't go back to work now. I've had a drink. I said, fuck it. So I got in the car and I've had a good drink. And he said, well, I'll go home. He said, where are you going? He said, we'll go back to the drinking club. I said, what's that? He said, well, the place is opening in the afternoon. So that's the second thing that's going to change my life, with a drinking club. And the second thing has changed my life completely, because now I'm going to the drinking club. I found a drinking club, not every day, and I'm working. I've not gone back to drinking every day at the dinner time, but what I'm looking at there is I've had a drink, and I need so I've had the first drink, and I've had to have the second one has to follow, you know, and I didn't know that until I come into AA, you know, and I've gone... Going back to work, I'm working most days, I'm earning a few quid and I'm okay, and then I'll pick up the pub, the lunchtime drink occasion, I'm ending up in the drinking club. And the attraction was, it was the fatal attraction of people I met in this drinking club. They were 26, 27, maybe somewhere around that, 25, a few of them. They all dressed smartly. I was attracted to them. That was the way it was. I wanted to know what they were doing. They didn't work. They all had nice cars and they had the best of stuff. And that was to change my life again, because it became, I got involved in crime. From that, I wanted to be like them, but I was full of fear. And so I would be drinking, I would be all right, and I got into with this and that. And that was another thing that changed my life. I had many relationships with women, and I would never let anyone close to me. I never told anyone anything about me. I was a closed shop. I never told no one nothing. I was full of fear in my life, and I was drinking and that, and I was doing things that I didn't want to be doing. And so I went along with this for quite a while, you know. I got arrested here and there, not for a lot, but a lot of things. And then the scale of the stuff was to increase a little bit, you know, and what I was doing. And my life was full of fear, and, you know, and I got another woman. I took another hostage, you know what I mean? And God bless her, she's still with me today. Well, I lived in Ealing. She said, we've got to get out of here. And so I got out of there, and I moved over to Kenton in Arrow, which was where her sister lived. And I couldn't settle in Kenton. I had an house in Ealing. We sold that, and we moved over there. We got married in alcoholism. You know, what I put her through was, when I was going to marry her, she had to tell her parents, you weren't, no, I was waiting to go up to the Crown Court in Guildford on a serious charge. And in those days, you could sort of buy the right people, if you like. You could buy the right people. And I wasn't all that. Only people showed me how to do it. And I got the case mirror basically put off for another nearly 2.5 years. And so I got married, and I was able to get it put off, and I walked away from Guildford Crown Court, and it was all right. It all got sorted out. You know, and so I got married in alcoholism. I took an hostage. And that was the material of my life, was to start. I'd found that dinner time drink, and I'd found the working men's clubs. And by the age of 25, which I wasn't working a lot, every now and again I'd do a little bit of work, but I wasn't working. I'd be out with the lads and doing this and thieving and various other things. I would do anything to get money. And so now I've got 26, I got married, and now I'm that, and I'm drinking, and I'm starting to drink in the morning. While I was full of fear, I found the morning drink. Someone said to me, what will make you bad, make you better? I was shivering and shaking in the morning, and I was ill at ease with myself, so I found the morning drink. And when I found the morning drink, I never got to work eventually, and a lot of the time, and what I was doing. So now I was in the laps of that, and my life was full of fear, and I couldn't stop drinking. I wasn't drinking every day, daily, but I was in the mornings most of me. So I would end up coming home late at night, and various. I was hardly coming home. So anyway, my wife thought it was a good idea. I think she thought at the time that if we had a child, she never told me this, but I know that today, that something might change. Well, I had a son, James, who was born, and I don't really remember him until he was 3.5, do you know what I mean? You know, and through this long period, I'm going to run along from here. I was in trouble. A lot of the time, you know, and bits and pieces. I never got sentenced to a lot of trouble. I was in many police stations and really locked up, and I was blacking out as well, do you know what I mean? Some of the things I've come up with when I'm blacking out and not knowing that I've done, with the violence and the things that went on in my life. And one morning I was to wake up, you know, this is just a shock that came to me of looking back what actually went on in my life through alcoholism, to be actually pulled out of your house by at least 20 policemen with lights flashing and not knowing what had gone on that night, and to be locked in a cell and be aware what was, something was happening, and then to be charged with attempted murder. You know, and I don't remember that. That's the gospel truth. I don't remember anything that went on that night. You know, and I thank God today for that, because at that time it was... unless the person would press charges against you, they couldn't charge me. And the person didn't want to press charges against me. And I can only see that because of who I was with and what it was in that area in West London where we lived. There were, a lot of these people were quite notorious, and people I was knocking about with was. And so that was a start, you know, of that. And as I said, my wife had a son, James, and I don't remember him a lot. I had him under duress maybe once or once every occasionally when I would have to take him out on a Saturday when my wife was working, and I would take him to the pub, put him on the slot machine, bag of crisps, a Coke, take him with me into the drinking club if I went there, and I would be home by 6 o'clock when my wife would get me in, and I'd get in and I would be going out again, you know. And eventually, you know, she said to me one day, I've been missing for 3 days. I've been at the drinking club and I've been out all weekend, and I got home on a Monday. And I'll never forget it. It was a Monday or a Tuesday. I'm not sure. It was in this club up in Wembley High Road. It was a drinking club in Wembley High Road. I came out of there and I was going to go to Chelsea. I had a ticket at Chelsea, and I was going to go to Chelsea, and I never got there, and I was on my way home, and I went past the Rising somewhere. I knew Frank, the owner. I knew Frank well, and who I'd done a lot of work for over the years, and bits and pieces and that. And I was going there to get a few quid off of him, and I went past there, and I thank God for that today. I went past another pub. I knew where I could go and get money, because I was always good for money. Do you know what I know? That everyone I think I borrowed, I always gave it back to people. They always knew that I would have money at some stage. And eventually I got home, you know, that night. It was between 8 and 9 o'clock, and my wife was there when I got in, and she said to me, unless you do something about your drinking, I'm going to divorce you. And James was in her arms, and I went to bed, you know. And I woke up the next morning, and my life was changing by this, because I found that dinner time drinking, I would disappear early in the morning and go out drinking early, and then we'd go and do something at some stage. Not all the time. I didn't was out stealing all the time, but I would be drinking most of the time because I had money to run around and do what I needed to do. And I'd go out in the morning, I would drink with other people around houses in the morning, and while their kids were getting ready for school, and 3 or 4 adults will be drinking around the table at 7 o'clock in the morning, you know, before we go out, you know. And so she said, and I got home that day, and she said to me about the not, you know, going. So I said to her, well, what do you want me to do? And she said, I want you to ring Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was going out in the morning, and she said, you've got to ring Alcoholics Anonymous when you get home. And I said, who are they? And she said, well, Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I went out that day, and I went out, and this is where I believe the shift of God happened in my life. I hear it often, do you know what I mean? And I went out that morning, I went to Norfolk. The other 3 chaps were there. His 2 daughters were getting ready to go to school. His wife was there looking on in amazement at these grown men, as she did every morning, drinking. And we went out that day, and I don't know what happened that day, you know, and I didn't have a drink that morning. And the lad said to me, why aren't you drinking now? But I said, I'm going to wait till I get a nice few quid. I said, I'm going to start drinking again. And I don't know where it came from, that word or that words, those words or anything. But it happened, and I went out that day. We went on to there, they drank there. We went on to a pub, I remember at the Duke York, over in Hanwell in West Severn. We went in there where I was known. And look, well, I've done a lot of my drinking around at West London there, all the pubs there. I was around that area, up Notting Hill and all around there, around the Bush and Labbot Grove and all that, around Hammersmith and all that. And I went up to the pub, I never had a drink. They went to the drinking club, I didn't go to the drinking club, I went home. I said, I've got to go and see someone, and I didn't. But I know my wife has said, I want to talk to you about this, or else it's over. So I went home. I couldn't tell these blokes I was with. I was going home to see my wife because she was be on top of me. Do you know what I mean? I had to show some sort of authority. And I went home, and she said, got in, and she said, you've got to phone Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, I don't know the number. She said, there it is. She took it out of the book, and there was no mobile phones then. Do you know what I mean? It was. So I said, I don't know them. You better phone them. And so she phoned them, and she said, they want to speak to you. So someone came on the phone. And said, started talking about, oh, I can't find this Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, would you like someone to come round? I've got a big mouth anyway, at the best of times. You know, and I said, oh, yeah. So I said, I'd like someone to come round. He said, oh, well, he'll be round to see you. And, okay. I thought, if I do this, I didn't think I was definitely not alcoholic, so I knew it, but I knew that someone was going to come round in the strings and the Mac from Shepherd's Bush Green, which I had occasionally drank with. And there was going to have a little yellow van with Alcoholics Anonymous splashed all over it. And where I lived in a quite nice area, what were the neighbours going to think? I mean, what have I done here? So anyway, so cut a long story short, someone knocked at the door or rang the bell, whatever it was, and he didn't have a little yellow van, and he didn't have the Alcoholics Anonymous, and he didn't have his strings and his Mac, and I thought, fucking hell, what's going on here? Anyway, so he come in and he said, and he come in and he introduced himself as Bob, an alcoholic, and running, cut long story short. And he talked to me about alcoholism and bits and pieces. And he said, do you want to go to a meeting? And I said, and it was getting on now. He'd been there about an hour or so. I think he came about 5:30, 6 o'clock. And he said to me, do you want to go to a meeting? I said, yeah. And I thought, what the fuck have I done here? And he said to me, oh, there's one down the road. He said, not far from me. He said, oh, you'll be all right. And I thought, oh. She said, you better go. And I said, oh, all right, I'll go. So anyway, he was a bit clever then. They make sure you get in the cars, you know what I mean? And they got in the car and he was off and he said, and I got in the meeting. It was a meeting, probably with, I'd never been to one, and there was probably 18 or 20 people there, and there's no strings of Mac in there. It was in Kingsbury and on North West Island. I never knew where the meeting was. I knew Kingsbury from, I drank around that area and all over fucking London when I was drinking. I've gone in there and you know, people started giving me their telephone numbers. Okay, now this is a bit. So I got all them numbers and I put them in the dustbin while they didn't see me. So I weren't coming back, and I didn't know there was no mobile phones then. So they started talking. I was wondering when they were going to get the drink out. Were they going to show me how to drink? What they was going to do? I weren't too sure. And they started drinking tea and coffee, and all of a sudden someone was going to do in this chair, and someone was up here like I am now. And I thought, what's going on? I don't remember much about that, to be honest. I'm now at the end of the meeting. I thank God for that today. I had nothing to do with God. I was a member of the CIA, the Catholic Irish Alcoholics, and I want nothing to do with God. I knew all about God at school, punishing God. I blew it out the window when I was a kid, you know. I never trusted or believed anything, you know. And I come out of that meeting, and at the end of that meeting, some people said to me about this and that, and they gave me a where to find, I think it was a local one or something at that time, and he gave me his telephone number, and someone was calling him Bunny Bob in the meeting. I wondered why that was. I said, why's your name Bunny Bob? He said, and someone told me he breeds rabbits. So that's why he was called Bunny Bob anyway. So I thank God that night that I walked out of that meeting, and I'm here to Dorothy mention it, and it's right. I picked up that Who Me, that newcomers pack. So I've gone home, and he said to me, I'll give you a ring during the week on my house number. And I said, okay. So anyway, so cut a long story short, I've gone in and got into bed beside my wife, and she was quite unusual because I pissed the bed on a regular basis. You couldn't tell your mates you were pissing the bed and all that, you know what I mean? That's fucking dangerous stuff, you know what I mean? And so I got into bed beside her, and she was pretending, I think she was reading a book, and she said to me, and I said, so I've got these questions out, and I'm going, anyway, so I've done them all. So I've had a quick tally up. And I've got 18 yeses and 2 don't knows. And it says, if you've answered more than 4 of these, you could have an alcohol problem. And I said to her, I think I've got an alcohol problem, Leash. She said, oh, no. So anyway, I wish it was all going to be rosy in the garden again. You know, it was all rosy. So anyway, so got up the next morning. I didn't work. So I got in the motor. Got to Norfolk. I then have to creep into the shop up the road and get a couple of quarts of cider, swig them in the rest of the van for the morning drink. Or have a drink indoors. If there's nothing in the fridge, you'll have to neck something at the first possible chance, which will be the Indian shop up round the corner, and go in there and get one out and sit there, or the car, whatever it was, the van I was taking. Anyway, I didn't have a drink that morning. I got to the house and I sat round there with them. Done this, got in there, and same thing then that day. Went to the drink, went to the pub, didn't go to the drinking club, went home. But I've got me where to find. So I looked the previous night for where there was a meeting. So I looked for a meeting anyway, and I've gone off down there. It's in North End, you probably remember this, off of Golders Green. Up that way, Golders, some nutcases up there, fuck me. Up there when I was a, well, Guardsman John was with it tonight, and there was nicknames everywhere, Actor John and this one John and Glenn, who had the old leopard and the back of the Rolls Royce and all that. Okay, there were some nutcases up around there when he was telling me his stories and that. And he had 10,000 people working for him in Canada, one of the biggest companies in the world. He ended up in Skid Row in New York, and he was in an AA meeting in Golders Green with nothing, you know. And I met some people up there, do you know what I mean? And I came out of there, and I met a good mate of mine, Terry No Socks, because it was all going on. I was 33 years of age, and it was Crockett and Tubbs, it was Miami Vice on the telly, and it was great, wasn't it? So I'd only gone in there that night, and I met some people in there, and I quite enjoyed it. It was like sometimes on a Monday night in there, it could be like a standoff. It was like the boxing ring, who wants to start? You know what I mean? They were all talking about the book, and like, you don't need to do that, you don't need to do this, you just do this and that. And also I was doing the meeting, I was still going in the house in the morning, going out stealing, doing the AA meetings. I couldn't tell these people I was going to AA now. So I was going to AA, and thank God I was going to AA. And I was hearing a little bit in there, I was doing a bit of this and this, and I met a good mate of mine, Terry, in there, and actor John, and I got involved with them a little bit, and I was doing that. And then we'd have the meeting after the meeting at night, and I was doing during the day, and so this carried on. I'm going to jump along here a bit. Now, 7 months, I'm doing the chaps, I'm stealing eventually certain times, while I was full of fear, I'm putting myself on offer to afford this. I'm not telling anyone what I'm doing. I'm not telling anyone about anything about me. I never told anyone anything about me. And I'm not drinking. I'm not going to the drinking club. I'm going here, there, and I'm still around that. And I'm going to AA meetings at night. And I met Terry. And Terry said to me, I met you, Albert, X amount of years ago in a pub in West London. So I come down to meet you. Someone told me about you, and I went down to meet you. And he said, you were fucking paralytic. He said, I thought, no. And he was 18 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he found Alcoholics Anonymous in Brixton Prison. That's where he found this, on the wing at Brixton Prison. No, Wandsworth Prison. In Wandsworth, he was doing quite a long sentence in there, and he found it in there. Do you know what I mean? And so, cut a long story short. Again, I'm saying that again, and I went out one morning to do something with my two mates that morning, and they left me behind, and the police caught me, and I'll never forget that. This was 7 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, almost 6 months. I come in the May, and this was in September the 22nd, 1985, and I got arrested, and I got banged up, and they were talking to me, and they said to me, we know who you was with this morning, they got away. And I didn't get doing anything, but I was chased and I got caught and that. I was left there, really, to be honest. And they questioned me for quite a while. And I said, you wouldn't happen to have anything what we're looking for in your house, would you? And I said, I don't know what you're on about. And I'll never forget it. And I just prayed to God. I'd never prayed to God at all. I put down the old thing, I needed help. And the stuff, what they were looking for, some of the stuff was at my house. From something else and something else and something. There was a lot of stuff in my house which would give me a plenty enough long sentence to be looked at anyway. What they'd have found in my house was in there. And I thank God today that I didn't go to my house. And eventually, after being in there for about 22 hours, they bailed me to appear in court again another day because they couldn't charge me with nothing because I had nothing. I said, we know you was with this morning. Now we know you, we know your name, we'll be keeping our eyes on you. And I came out of there, and thank God, I rang Terry No Socks. And I rang him, and he was indoors in Neasden, and he came over and picked me up. And went to my house, and God was in my house out of it. And I don't know whether it was that night or the next night, we went to a meeting. And that changed my life, because I left them people behind. What God given me was, I knew there was no honesty amongst thieves. After what went on that morning, there was no honesty amongst thieves. And I got out of that, and I gave what I needed was a way back to them, and I left and I walked away from them, and I had no play to play, no part in my life again. You know, so I was in AA now, and started in AA, and I went out, and what happened? I got a job. I think for a little while, and I used to knock around with Terry, and Terry hardly worked in his life anyway. we used to do the meeting after the meeting. And we would be back at someone's house And they would be talking about that book up there, the big book. And someone was saying, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And they were punctuating that. And he said, we don't need to do that. And the other one was saying, you don't need to do that. And we used to have the meeting around my house some nights. My wife used to say to me, fuck me, they'll be for scrapping here in a minute. Once she's on going to bed, she said, you're going to start fighting over this book. Anyway, cut a long story short, I kept on at it and I didn't want to do it. And one day I come home from Terry's house, I got home about 2:45 that morning. And I went out and I saw him, and I went out to him the next day, and I went out to a meeting that night. And I said to him, I said, you never guess what, Terry, what happened tonight? I said, what's that? I said, I went and got a job. He said, you didn't, did you? And I said, yeah. He said, something happened after you left last night as well. I said, what happened there? And he said, I took my clothes off in my hallway. He said, there was no one else there. He said, and I got on my knees and asked for God for help. He said, I've never asked God for anything. So there were two changes, you know what I mean? And it was to go on like that. My life changed, and the periphery in my life changed. AA meetings every night. I went to an AA meeting every night. And different meetings all over the place. I got to know some characters, and I was locked about, and I loved it. But I still didn't do no more about it. Then I got myself a sponsor. Someone said, let me get yourself a sponsor. So I liked this chap. I saw him, and him, someone, he came back to my house one night, and my missus was there. She said, he's on TV. I didn't know the fuck she was on about. I never knew he was on TV, and he was on TV, and they all knew him. And his name was John, and my boy, little boy James, was now a little bit older, and he used to tell him he had the magic ring. So John, every time John had to come, it was John the magic ring. James would have to tell him a story, or something. Anyway, so. And then he started telling me what we had to do and all that. And then he said to me about making amends. And he said, you might have to, he said to me, I know, I'm not going to mention who it was. He said to me, you might go to jail. I thought, fuck you, go to jail. Because he said, you might have to make the amends to these people. I thought, I definitely ain't going to jail. So I blew it out of the water. He went away. He went to the States. And I did keep in touch with him, but I never ventured any more with him or anything to do with that. The program of recovery. You know, and I carried on, you know, and then my wife said to me one day, she said, she's from a woman who swore she'd never have any more kids by me, she said, I'm pregnant. I said, great. So now I'm sober, I'm doing all right, I've got a job and I'm doing all right, and now my life changed because I got a job, and from on then went, I got into my own business with someone else, and the periphery of my life was pretty all right. You know, I had all the trimmings of all the what I went on with it. I hadn't done this stuff. I didn't think about drinking, I didn't think about not drinking, you know, and I was doing what I needed to be doing. I was going to meetings regularly, and I was helping people. I started meetings, I was doing intergroup, I was on this, and I started doing prison service. I was doing everything what I should have been doing, you know, but I still hadn't gone through that, you know, and I carried on, and I was okay, but I would get resentful every now and again. I would get angry. And the old Albert would return. I would want to kill people. And it came to a crux one day, you know. I had a daughter, so sorry, I stopped them, Kate, you know, my wife had a daughter called Kate from a woman who swore she'd never have any kids by me. So there was one bonus, you know, and that was to be a bonus in my life, you know, and I spent a lot of time. And then, I've done lots of service. Because she was involved with the church, the Catholic school where they went. I got involved with the school and I was helping the kids. And I was like the Pied Piper around my way with the kids. Everyone knew me, I run football teams and everything, you know, I got on well. And so all that was taking me away from this. I was involved with things all my life. It was filling the hole in the soul, I say, really. And at 20 years and 4 months, I remember it well. I was now doing all right. Not periphery, I was still going full of service in AA and starting meetings and doing this. And I was AA or full on and helping out local communities and starting a youth club and on an estate in North London, which no one would do with my wife for the kids who didn't have nothing. And that was all right, it was well accepted. And so I was doing good things that I thought I was doing right, and which I was doing right, I felt good about it. And so that caught up with me a little bit, that, you know, and I was restless, irritable and discontent. And I was doing all right in what I was doing, my work and that, and I decided that it was time we got out of London, you know. So now, I decided I'll build us an house in Buckinghamshire. So I built us an house in Buckinghamshire, and we sold our house and we moved into rented accommodation for a while. But I did have no consequences of asking, did they want to go? I was doing it, and they had to go. Now, my James was about 21, my daughter was 18, my wife was the same age as me, and they didn't want to go. They never told me, but they did go with it, and we went, and I built one house, and I built two houses, and I built three houses, and sold them, and it didn't end up a good venture, really, but that was okay, you know. And my wife, we stayed there, and it was all right, and I was still doing all right, and I was building houses for other people then, you know. And but what happened with the context of what happened there was, I'd moved out to a place called Hazelmere in Buckinghamshire, which, and I've never been to a meeting out that way, and I went to a meeting, I'd been to Beaconsfield and that a couple of times, but I went to a meeting in Princess Risborough on a Monday night, and I'll never forget it. And there was a lady sharing from where I'm talking about now, and all she talked about was that book and a solution to this illness. And she was punching me all round the ribs, and I thought, I've got to do something about this. I've got to do something. So as soon as the meeting was over, I went and got hold of her. Not literally, I went and got hold of her and said to her, look, can you put me in touch with the person who's took you for the programme of recovery? There's mobile phones now. It's 1985, and no, it wasn't 85, that's when I came into AA, so it was 20 years later than that. 2005 nearly, yeah. 2005, yeah, it was 2005, that's right. And by the time I got home, I had a telephone number, she phoned me, and it was the person I talked to you about there today, Dorothy John. And he got on the phone, and I was on the way home, and he said to me, I said, I'll ring you when I get in. I got in and I rang, and he said, tell me a bit about you. And I said, oh, well, I'm 20 years and 4 months in Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't had a drink since my first meeting. He said, okay. And he said, first thing he said to me, he said, your problem's not alcohol, is it? I thought, what the fuck's he on about? You know, I never knew anyway. So he said to me, do you want to come up and see me? And I said, well, look, can I come up and see you? And so I went about 60 miles the next night to come up and see him. And I went in and I had a chat with him, and he said, all I can say to you is, he told me a bit about him. He was 5.5 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was chairman of Intergroup, and he hadn't done no programme or no book, and he was having to travel 30 miles to a meeting because he was falling out with everyone in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was falling out with this one and that one, and he was falling out with everyone. And so he said, and I found someone. He said, I met a fella called Dan Brown, who was an American, and we'd come from one of the meetings in the States, and he was in England. And what he was doing at that time was, he was helping people, roughly, was 5 years or 6 years over a time, who wasn't doing the program. And he said, I went there on a Sunday night. He said, I travelled 80 miles down to his house in Chelmsford. He said, and I got there, and he said, and there was 26 people there at his house on a Sunday night, because he would take people through the book and tell them what they do, and if they wanted to do it, he'd go through it with them. And he did. So John said, I went in there and I'd done it, and he said, and I came back, and he said, I'm okay today, you know. And so he told me, he said, if you do this stuff, he said, you'll be all right. And I didn't know what he meant. I would be all right. I felt all right. The periphery of my life was all right. But I was restless, ill, and discontent every now and again. And I could get angry. So he said to me, if you want to come up, he said, I'm going to take a group for the programme in my house, he said, in 2 weeks' time. He said, if you want to come up, he said, we'll talk about it the week before. He said, and see what happens. So I went up, and there's 13 people there, and there was, you know, it was okay. There were some addicts there and everything. It's only changed the word, isn't it? You know, I didn't know that at the time. And he said, we're going to go through the program in 6 weeks, and we're going to study the first 164 pages. He said, nothing else. So I went on and I'd done that. We had to do bits of homework, and I'd done it for the 6 weeks. And then he said, we're going to go through the program over a weekend. And he was a lovely person, and his wife Sue's a lovely lady, you know. And so it was coming up to the time of the doing it, and then I realised, he said, we're going to go through the program in a week, so and so's time. I thought, fuck me. I said to him the week after, I said, John, I can't do it that weekend. I said, is there any chance I can get away and I don't do it that weekend, and I could do it another day with you? He said, why? I said, Chelsea playing Liverpool in the FA Cup semi-final at Old Trafford. I need to go with all the lads. He said, no problem. He said, is there anyone else in the group who wants to do it? So three of us done it. And that was to change my life, because on that Thursday, I went up there. We went up and he made breakfast when we got there. And he asked us what we wanted before we went there. And I went in there and I'd done step one straight away. I was answered the question, and got on my knees for the second one, which three of us did. We all got on our knees. We didn't have to get on our knees. I held hands and I thought, this is a bit strange, like, but anyway, I did it. I didn't feel any different. And I was asked, was I willing to believe possibly now or maybe in the future that there was a power greater than Albert? As soon as I answered that, yes, my life changed. Straight away. Because from the time I walked from here to where Dorothy is, I was in the other room and I was doing my step four. You know, I'd done step three, I was doing step four. I got my paper out, all the stuff ready, and boom, I started writing. I must have wrote for four or five hours. Just kept on writing. There was people in my head for 40 odd years. There were people I wanted to kill, who I wanted to hurt. The girl was one of them. The resentment of this one, fucking that one. Rat one, that one, that one. This one had wronged me. They'd done that to me. This. The fucking this was adding. Until I stopped. Eventually, it just stopped. There was nobody left. There was things in my head I was going to tell nobody. It was all right on paper. Every single one of them. I was free. I didn't know I was free. So we had a bit of lunch. He said, well, this will end, Albert, when it ends today. So we had lunch. A late lunch it was, I've got to be honest. And then I shared it that afternoon, and it was I was a bit worried about sharing it because the other two people were there as well. We were all going to share it, and I found I was first on. I thought, oh, what they're going to think. So I shared it all. I'd done it and I shared it all, and I thought, oh, okay. Anyway, I thought that, so I'm out and I'm listening to the sharing, and but at the end of it, when we got together, there was two women and me. I was talking about it and I thought, I couldn't remember a bit about any of their sharing, and they couldn't remember a bit about my sharing. And then, you know, we went with that, and I've done five and that, and I've done six and seven. When I'm six and seven, put the book down, read it an hour later, and asked was there anything else that needed to be added for the next day, or not the next day, and there wasn't nothing needed to be added, and I had me a list from four, make the amends. We went through all that, because we had them all down, and he had them, and he said, this is what you've got to do. I went home, you know, sort of some of them I didn't want to make, I've got to be honest. I went to Old Trafford on the Saturday, lost there, got home on the Sunday. Monday morning, I was downstairs in me house, my wife had gone to work, my daughter had gone to work, James had gone to work. And I didn't really need to go to work, but I was going to go to work and do something. And the phone rang, and it was one of the girls that I'd been on, done the programme with the weekend, and this was the Monday. And she said, how are you getting on with your amends, Albert? I said, I haven't had a chance to do any of them yet. She said, I started the weekend. She said, it's great. So anyway, I cut a long story short, kind of keeps on saying that. Right beside me, where I was standing, was the desk. In the kitchen, don't want it to sound like it was a great big desk or anything. I think it was a desk with a drawer in it. And my list was in there, so I pulled it out. And I got it out. And I've looked. I'm now 2 miles away from that police station in Alwick, the first station I was ever arrested at when I was 15. I went straight in down there, parked the car up, and went in there and made my amends. What would ever give me the strength to do that? Made it in there, I left out there. When I come out of there, I went up and got my car. I looked across the road. Where had I parked? I parked in the Catholic Church car park. Of course, they put me through some things when I was a kid, and the nuns and all that, and all the bits. I went in, and there was a priest at the door. So I went in there, I got hold of him, and I made my amends in there. That started the day of, it was a bit like that. It was early morning. I got home at 9 o'clock that night. London and the home counties had been quite cleared. Not all of them. Some people didn't want to see me. I had to track some people down. They didn't want to, definitely didn't want to meet me. I ended up in Hertfordshire meeting the nuns. The nuns that I knew had all gone. I found a nun place up in Hertfordshire. I got there only through asking people. Asked the priest. Eventually, I went to where I was. I went to my school where I was brought up, where they washed my mouth out, all them nuns and that. So I'm sitting in the car outside the school in West London. And it was a sunny day, I'll never forget it. I had my window wound down, and I could see all the kids in there, and then they went in. The bell went, they all went in. And this bloke was walking past my window. And I said, excuse me, he was just seen walking in the gate, which I walked in all them years previous. This is junior school, not a senior school. And I said to him, is there any chance that I can see the headmaster? He said, I'm the headmaster. I said, oh. You know, so he's walking down the road having his sandwich, just going back into the school. So I went in there and I made my amends to there, and off I went. And you know, I got home that night. I was on my way home, and I was now living out in Aysham. My brother lived in Amersham, you know, and I needed to make my amends to him because it was like family at war with him. Like, I hated him, and it didn't have a lot to do with me, to be honest. And am I getting any time? Right, yeah, it's okay. All right. So I moved on from there. He worked there, and I moved along from there, you know, and that changed my life, you know. I got the instructions when I went through the program. I went back and made them amends, done all that was on. Every one of them was on, it was done, other than the people who wouldn't see me. And he said, you're free now, you know. And that's okay, I was free. He said, this is what we do though, Albert. I'm retiring at night, we do what says 86 in the big book. And on awakening, we do this. I said, how long do I have to do this for? He said, this must continue for our lifetime. I thought, I don't want to be doing this every day, really. I thought, I will start it. So I started it. I kept on doing it. And I'd ring him. He said, ring me. So I'd ring him. Give him a little bit of a gratitude list. So I started doing that as well. That was optional, by the way. And I said to him, John, I'm feeling different. He says, oh, I'm good. So I got to know him, he's a good friend today. And that changed my life. Completely changed my life. Didn't stop me getting resentful. Didn't stop me getting angry, you know. I knew the way to do it, and I know how to do it. My daughter is so much like me. She knows how to press my buttons, you know. And that's the start there of, you know, okay, and that. And then, so I've got a daughter who's living with me, who's never seen me drink. And this year, or 3 years ago, she told me she's pregnant, and she said to me, rang me and said, Dad, can I come and see you? And she said, I'm pregnant. I said, yeah. And she said, what do you want me to do? I said, well, Kate, it's your baby. What do you want me to do? I said, whatever happens, I'll be there. I said, the options are you make your own mistakes or you make... So she said, I'm going to have it anyway. So the person, she married someone, she had a love affair from the age of 17, who lived in Turkey, and he wasn't going to be with her. So she said, can I come and live with you? She was living with us anyway. And I said, yeah, no problem. So anyway, now I've got my granddaughter, who's 2.5, Elsie. So this stuff changed my life. And I'm going to jump right along here. I got up this morning. I was at the peep. Sorry. I was at a meeting last night when I got home and I was okay. I got up this morning, I went downstairs, and my granddaughter come down. This is what I asked of me. She said to me, I said, hello, Elsie. And she said, hello, granddad. She said, go and do your book. My book. She sees me every morning in that seat. Doing what I need to be doing. To have this gift. What wonderful gift. Yeah, very often I cry. That's what Alcoholics has given me. And those other people I'm talking about, I grew up with, and I knocked them out with, till that age, are all dead. They're all dead. 15 people I grew up with are dead through this illness. And I've buried most of them. And one of them was a good mate of mine, used to play for the football team in the town, Robin Friday. Great, one of the best players I ever knew. And Robin died at 39. I left him behind when I was 30 something, and I buried him, you know. And his problem was drinking drugs, you know, and I left all that behind. I never see him after. I went to AA at 33. I went to his funeral, I was a good friend of his, you know. And this is the most incredible thing that I've done in my life. And all I have to do doing is carrying a message to sponsor people, be giving what I give back to Alcoholics Anonymous, give it back. And my attendance at meeting is what it needs to meet. I like solution-based meetings today, and that's okay. I need to hear about, because that book, I'll be honest with you, you must remember this as well, Dorothy, is that it wasn't talked about a lot. It was a certain people. I met people in an AA room said, you don't need to do that stuff. And so that's why I probably veered. I took the easiest soft away, maybe at the time. It didn't do me any time. I've never felt that I needed a drink since I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never lied on my wife. I've never been with other women. There's been plenty of opportunities over the years. I've fallen in love on AA a few times nearly, you know. Someone said to me, under every skirt, Albert, there's a slip, you know, when I first come around, you know, and that's okay. And there's been some near times when I think I could need a new model. And then I always thought, she stood by me all those years. I don't need another woman today. She's the best thing that's ever happened to me. And what's my son, James, I thought I'd never get rid of him. And I thought he was going down the same route as I was going down. And a few years ago, he got a bit of a scare one day. I knew he was doing something. And I said to him, James, I said, you can't. I said, someone had told him, not that I was a notorious person in London, but someone had told him they knew his dad and years before. And he got involved with a bit of crime and that. And then all of a sudden, it was okay. And I said to him, don't be bringing that stuff in my house. I said, you ain't welcome here. And then he got a near miss, and he got out of it, and he come and worked with me, you know. And now he's working, he's traded up, and he's all right. And this year he's getting married, you know. And I thank God for that today, you know. He's put this woman through long enough. I think he's been engaged to her for about 8 years, you know what I mean. And he's getting married in Mallorca, you know. And that's lovely. I've been out there last year, just have a look where it is. I had no input on it, but that's okay. That's where he wants to get married. We're all going out. The royal family's going out there. All our family's going out there. And there's a lot of people going out there. But I just look at what this life has given me. It's given me that. I used to, when people used to say that to me, this will give you the life which is beyond your wildest dreams, I used to want to put my two fingers down my throat and be sick. I used to think, oh, that's the sort of people they are. But today I have many friends in Alcoholics Anonymous. Terry No Sox is a good mate of mine. He's moved up the country a bit. But, you know, and I see him there, I ring him there, and his kid, you know, his son, I think, died of this illness a lot long ago. He was 20, and I was his godfather, you know. And sad occasion for being up there. There's nothing I could say to him. I said to him, there's nothing I can say, Terry, you know. It was a sad occasion, and I love being in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have met you before, Dorothy, a couple of times, and you're a lady friend at the front here. And, you know, I've met plenty of people in Alcoholics Anonymous, but sometimes, you know, Archie and people like that, and you know a good friend of mine, Derek as well, who moved down to Devon. Derek, I knew Derek when we was out there doing it, you know, and I bumped into him in an AA meeting in West London, you know, and he thought, fuck me, what are you doing in here? And it wasn't 3 months between us. That's 20, nearly 30 years ago. And I was on the phone to him the other day. He'd just come back from holiday in the old garden. And good friends. We'd done every meeting in London in the home counties, avoiding doing the programme. You know, and I look back, the bonus of that was when I went for it with John, he saw the change in me and he went through. And that's what this is about, you know, to carry the solution of the illness, which is a wonderful thing today. And there's my time up. Thank you very much.